Welcome to Radio Shalom. I'm Deb Levy, and today we're talking about leadership. Now, you know me as one of the voices of Radio Shalom, but what you might not know is that two of my areas of real passion are education and leadership. And being in the Jewish community gives young people like me so many opportunities to be involved with education and leadership. One of the things that I really appreciate about growing up in the community is that age has never been a barrier to taking on these kinds of leadership challenges. And last week, B'nai B'rith, one of the wonderful Jewish community aid organizations that provides a lot of support in our community, had their annual awards for youth leadership. These are the Stephen Scher Youth Leadership Awards, which celebrate the contributions of the young leaders in our communities. And they don't just celebrate the contributions, but they also do a fantastic job of bringing together different organizations that are often working in parallel, but not necessarily interacting together so much as they're each busy with their own projects during the year. And I have to say, it was a real privilege, real privilege to be part of the evening and to see so many inspiring young leaders. But also for us to be surrounded by some of the community giants upon whose shoulders we all stand. It really brings together so many people who contribute to the well-being and the success of our community. And what's really exciting is behind the scenes, while we all see each other within the context of the Jewish community, most of these people are also taking part in leadership outside of the community as well, in the wider Auckland and New Zealand communities, and sometimes even internationally. So for those who are interested in leadership, listen out, because each year we do announce the leadership awards and they're worth coming to. It's a really, really exciting opportunity to see some of what's happening in the community. This year we had the biggest number of nominations that we've ever had across four different organizations. One was Moishe House. This is a fantastic initiative that has identified that the time in which often Jewish people are disconnecting from the community is when they're in their 20s. Particularly if they're not on campus as students, they're out in the world as professionals. And the innovation of Moishe House is to create an informal space where a group of young people live together in a subsidized flatting situation, and they create different events that are relevant to people their age so that they can tap in and connect to the Jewish community without necessarily the formality of the synagogue or of the different community organizations that are otherwise a bit more structured. So that was one of the organizations. Two of the organizations that were represented were our youth groups, Habonim and B'nai Akiva. These provide a real special Jewish environment twice a year for young people to come together and get to experience education and adventure, social time in a live-in environment. For Habonim, that means living under canvas and enjoying all the joys of the New Zealand wildlife. For B'nai Akiva, it's more of a cabin situation. I was really blessed that I went to both, and I have to say I really enjoyed both. There's nothing like a warm shower at B'nai Akiva, and there's nothing like looking up at the stars when you're at Habonim camp. But both provide a really special environment for our kids in summer and winter camps, and then with programming during the year. And the final organization that was represented at the awards was AUJUS, the Australasian Union of Jewish Students. And that has a New Zealand branch that works on campus, connecting young Jewish people to their peers and also providing a Jewish voice on campus as well. So the four organizations came together with their representatives, those who'd been nominated, and the generosity of B'nai B'rith and of Leslie Scher, the wife of Stephen Scher, who we remember with the awards. Then we were able to provide a scholarship for the winner and two smaller scholarships for the runners-up, so that they'll be able to keep doing the amazing work that they're doing in the community. And sitting there watching these young leaders really got me thinking about leadership. And when I look back at my own leadership influences, there's one particular poem that really comes to mind for me. And it's a poem that I suppose has relevance in terms of personal relationships, our habits, our work, but also for me, is a really, really useful tool for any leaders out there who are trying to take their leadership from great to good to a place of real excellence. So excuse me while I paraphrase, but it's a poem by Portia Nelson. It's called Autobiography in Five Chapters. Chapter 1. I walk down a street. I've fallen into a hole. I don't know where I am. It takes me forever to get out. Chapter 2. I walk down a street. I've fallen into a hole, but I know exactly where I am. I get out almost immediately. Chapter 3. I walk down a street. I see the hole. I fall in anyway because it's a habit, but I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the street. I see the hole. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down a different street. When we look back over the different positions which we may have held that entailed leadership, very often we will come across the same potholes again and again and again. They'll just be in a different form. I have to say the pothole with which I'm most intimately acquainted is the pothole of giving your all, burning out, and then realizing that you don't have a succession plan. That's my pothole. And when I heard this poem and reflected on my leadership, I could see that that was a pattern that had happened again and again in the different leadership positions I'd held, whether it had been school leadership or student leadership, community leadership, leadership roles at work, that really I was so passionate about the work that I was doing and so determined to do it to the best of my ability that ultimately I would often get to a point where I was too exhausted to keep going. And at that point, I'd realised that I'd been investing so much in the now that I hadn't thought enough about the future. And actually, succession planning is so important for all of us when it comes to leadership, because the biggest compliment that somebody can give you is actually not, you're the best leader that this organisation has ever had or that this team has ever had. The best compliment someone can give you is that the person after you is the best leader that the organisation has ever had. Because that means you've left an organisation and a setup in which they can thrive, and hopefully you've been part of the selection and the handover and the support of that person as well to enable them to do even more than you could do when you came to the organisation or came into the role. So for all of us who want to take our leadership from good to exceptional, we need to be able to work out what our potholes are. And they're going to be different for every person. One of the major potholes that I see in not just community-based organisations, but very much in the commercial world as well, is the phenomenon of people throwing their toys, yeah? People having tantrums or using their mood to try and get their way. And this can be a tempting hole for people to fall into because they think, well, you know, I'm very important, and if people think that I'm going to leave unless this changes, then they'll listen to me. And I think we have to be careful on a couple of fronts with this one. One, it's just not an acceptable way to behave, yeah? We're taught from kindergarten that it's not okay to just have a tantrum and throw your toys. And so I don't see why when we're much older it should become acceptable to have a tantrum and throw your toys. But there's another aspect that can be risky about this as a leadership technique, if we're going to stretch our imaginations to call it that. And that is that there is a chance that at some point people will just let you do that. Yeah, that you'll threaten and say, look, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to be involved with this project or this organisation unless X, Y, Z. And that someone will turn around and say, okay. And that's it. You no longer have the opportunity to be part of the leadership of that team or organisation. Some of you may be familiar with my lovely mother, Diane Levy. She's an amazing family therapist, speaker and author, and actually she was a TV star for a short time as well with her program Demons to Darlings, which earned her the title of New Zealand's Super Granny as opposed to Super Nanny because she is somewhat mature. And Mum had a really interesting situation once where someone came to her not as a family therapist, but as a business person, because they said, look, I know you're an expert at dealing with children and helping parents to deal with their children, but I'm at work and I've got a grown-up that is behaving like a child. So I don't want the help of a management consultant, and I don't want the help of a business coach. I want the help of a family therapist, because this person is being so childish. I think that's the expertise that I need. They went on to explain that in board meetings, any time that things did not go the way that this particular person wanted, they would say, well, if that's what's happening, I'm leaving, and would stand up and go to leave, and that all of the other people on the board would say, oh, no, no, sit down, please don't go, and would start trying to pacify the angry person who'd stood up. And my mum listened and said, do you have notes or handouts or like a blotter that people are writing on during the meeting? Is there some piece of paper in front of every person? And the man who came to seek the advice looked at her strangely and said, yes. And she said, look, what I want you to do is have a word with everyone else at the meeting. Everyone's obviously recognised this is the problem. And ask them all, next time it happens, they're not to say a word. Not one word. And they just need to look down at their blotters. They can write a little something on their piece of paper, focus on their notes, but just don't say a word. And it'll be really interesting for all of you to see what happens next. The man was interested in the advice, also interested to see what would happen next, and he decided he was going to try it for the next board meeting. So he informed everybody about the plan, and at that point, he didn't know what would happen, but he was pretty sure that at some point during the meeting, if things didn't go the way of this particular person, they would stand up and storm out. That was what happened. And as he got up and went to go, he said, I'm leaving. Nobody said a word. He tried again. I'm leaving. He moved towards the door. Super uncomfortable, but nobody said a word. He got all the way to the door, put his hand on the handle, said, well, I'm going to have to go if this doesn't change. Still not a word. At that point, he made a grumbly sound, returned to his seat, and the meeting continued. Such an interesting dynamic. The truth is that when any of us decide we're going to give people an ultimatum about whether or not we're prepared to be generous with our leadership, we also put ourselves in a position where we may lose the leadership opportunity altogether. Now, even if that's a risk we're willing to take, let's say we're in a situation with our leadership where we so strongly disagree with the course of action that the team is going to take that we feel that we can no longer be a part of it, then the best course of action is not to storm out, to threaten, or to get angry, but actually to take a deep breath and find out if there's another way to exit with more elegance. For all of us, there are going to be times in our leadership where something reaches a point where we can't, with our own integrity, be part of whatever is happening. But if we can leave in a way that doesn't burn bridges, that keeps communication there for the future, for when either the organisation, the team, or ourselves wants to once again be in interaction and be a part of each other's journeys, then that's going to serve us much better in the future. And then the worst thing someone can say about you, instead of, oh, well, he or she stormed out and held us all to ransom, or he or she threw their toys and behaved like a complete child, is he or she didn't agree with what we were doing and decided they weren't able to be part of the project, but would really love to be involved in the future. And that leaves a possibility for us to continue more leadership in the future. So we've talked about two potholes so far. My personal favourite, or the one that I'm trying my best to avoid, which is around burning out and not having a succession plan. We've talked about being really careful not to throw your toys and how important that is. And the last one that I want to talk about is actually being careful not to glorify the glory days. So let me explain. One of the things I've noticed, particularly in community-based organisations, but I've also seen it in some of the corporate organisations I've worked for as well, is that we tend to romanticize the past. We look back at how things were and we see them as the glory days. And we reflect and go, it was so good back then. In fact, if we're honest, we often do this in our personal lives as well. You know, oh, I remember when. And we look back and we paint this picture where we somehow forget all of the challenges, the difficulties and the things that weren't going very well, and instead have this image of a past that was so much better than the present that we're in or the future that we face. There are a couple of leadership issues with this. One, if we're trying to inspire people to take action now in order to improve the future, then to look back is only useful to a certain point. I really like the Māori imagery of the waka, that when we're looking back, if we're doing so, you know, even if we've got our back to the future, we're looking back, but we're using our oars to take us forward. It's that by looking back at our history, it inspires us and reminds us where we've come from, and that helps us pick our direction for the future. Now, that kind of nostalgia, that kind of looking at the past is okay. But the one that's really unhelpful and that you hear sometimes coming up in meetings is when people are proposing ideas for the future, and instead of building on them or thinking about what's happening in the present that can take us into the future, you end up with people getting stuck in, oh, how good things used to be. And very often it acts more as brakes than oars. It's really holding us back from moving forward, and it's more of a complaint or an accusation against what's happening in the present than it is a learning from the past. And look, I have to say it's a really easy pothole to fall into, because of course we have nostalgia about the past and of where we've come from. And at the same time, that nostalgia should only be used for inspiration and not to put the brakes on moving forward. So I'm sure there are many more potholes. As I'm speaking, I imagine you're thinking of your own leadership, and you can see what potholes you fall into, what are the patterns that you find yourself caught up in. But I think even more importantly than the potholes, and what I want to focus on for the rest of our show today, is how can we walk down different streets? Because as Portia Nelson explains in chapter 4, to walk down the same street, see the hole and walk around it, yeah, that's something. But to choose a different street altogether, that is really amazing. And for the first new street, I want to just share a story with you about a man called Bob Chapman, who I find to be a very inspiring leader. In 2008, Bob realized that due to a huge cancellation of orders, he was now in a position where his company wasn't financially viable. And the advice that he'd received from his team was that he was going to have to lay off a large number of staff or the business would fail. And that didn't satisfy Bob as a course of action. He cared a lot about his staff. He also cared about the business and understood the practicalities of the financial situation that he faced. But he felt there had to be a better way. And so he called his entire team together and he said to them, look, he was transparent. This is our situation. This is what we're facing financially. The way that I see it, it is better for all of us to suffer a little bit than for any one of us to lose everything. So this is what I propose. Over the next year, each one of you will need to take 4 weeks of unpaid leave in order for us to deal with this financial threat. He said, it's up to you if you want to take it spread out over the course of the year, if you want to take it in a 1 month block. And interestingly, while he didn't say it, what his employees innovated and what he was proud of them for is that those who couldn't afford unpaid leave at all would trade their unpaid leave with those who wouldn't mind some extra unpaid leave for a project they were working on or for education or family time or travel, and they were in a financial position to do so. And what happened next was just amazing. Not only did the company end up in a better financial position than was expected, productivity increased and there was a great atmosphere at work, but the employees really trusted Bob and the company. And the loyalty that it engendered among people, the well-being that they felt, knowing that they were cared for, looked after, and that, you know, there was no threat to their job, that Bob had found another way, had a huge impact on them. And when I look at Bob as a leader and kind of analyze what made him such an amazing leader, the things that really stand out for me First of all, that he had that balance of head and heart. He totally cared about his people. To him, they were everything. He wasn't willing to let them go. But at the same time, he was pragmatic and understood the practicalities of being faced with a situation in which if he didn't take action, the whole company would be lost. Those two factors, head and heart, combined with his creativity and innovation to find a new solution that was different from what other people were doing and would enable it to be a win-win-win situation, was a winning combination. For most of us in our leadership, we're not blessed like Bob to be amazing with people and empathy and amazing with planning, practicality, detail and logistics, and to be innovative and creative as well. But what we all do have the ability to do is take a moment to reflect, work out where our strengths lie, and then build around us a team that fill in some of the weaknesses. Now, for me, I feel really fortunate that I do find it easy to connect with people, care about people, the empathy stuff comes naturally, and I really enjoy creativity and innovation. I have to work much, much harder when it comes to focusing on details, logistics, planning. So I try and make sure that whenever I'm in a leadership role, that my 2IC, the person who's supporting me and that I'm supporting them, is somebody who has those strengths. And so for all of us, if we want to walk down a different street, that different street needs to involve head, heart, and innovation, but it doesn't need to all come from us. That's a lot of pressure on one leader. All we need to do is find other people who have it that we can use to support our leadership. And in that way, we can walk down a different street. For the second street that I want to propose today, I want to talk about Moshe Rabbeinu Moses, because he's arguably one of the most amazing leaders in history. As somebody who has tried to lead Jews in various committees and various organizations, the fact that he could literally lead hundreds of thousands of them through a desert, I find incredibly amazing. And I really want to draw on some of Moshe Rabbeinu Moses' wisdom. For those listening at home, by the way, and they hear me say Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe is the Hebrew name for Moses, and Rabbeinu means our teacher. So when you hear someone with the title Rabbi, very often it's translated into like our priest or our chaplain, but actually, literally, we're acknowledging someone as our teacher. So Moshe, Moses, is in a situation where he's about to lead the Jewish people out of Egypt. They've been in slavery for a couple of hundred years, and they're now going to be going to freedom, and yet their freedom is going to come with a lot of challenges as well. And of all the different management and leadership techniques Moses could employ, he doesn't go for motivating techniques or empathy techniques. What he says, and he repeats this three times in three different ways, is the idea that this is the story that you will tell your children. That message, that what's happening now, this is a story that you will tell your children, is so powerful. And for all of us who want to be good in leadership, we need to follow that example and find a strong narrative. What's our story? Our story as individuals, our story as a team, our story as an organization, our story as a community. What's our story? Because once you're clear on what your narrative is, what your story is, and where you come from, you can also work out what kind of a story you're shaping in the present, and when you look back, what kind of a story you want to tell. And again, that whole process can lead us to a much clearer direction in the future. And what is leadership if not a clearer direction for the future? So that's number two. Number three, I want to dedicate in loving memory to Stephen Scher, who we have the Memorial Awards in honor of, and to his inspiring wife, Leslie, because they live this, he lived and she lives this, like nobody else. And that is street number three, whatever leadership you're doing, do it with a smile. Pirkei Avot, the Ethics of the Fathers, a significant book of Mishnah, of commentary on the different Jewish laws and ideals, talks about how we are obligated to greet every person with a positive face. What does that mean, to greet people with a positive face? It means you've got to smile. The Chazon Ish, another great rabbi, great teacher, explains that our mood impacts others. Yeah? Every mood that we have, and then every social interaction we have, has an impact on the people around us. And look, this is nothing new. While this is age-old Torah wisdom, it's also reflected in what we know from modern psychology as well. You know, our neural pathways and the ways in which the neurons in our brain move actually mirror each other in our social interactions. On a physiological point of view, our emotions are contagious. Rabbi Salanter takes this even a step further and explains that our faces are not our own. They are actually public property. I'm going to say it again because it's quite radical. Your face does not belong to you. It belongs to everybody else. How so? If really the way that you feel has such an impact on other people, if the face that you present, yeah, if you're positive, if you're optimistic, if you're smiling, if you're happy, that can influence all the people around you, and to the contrary, that if you have a negative countenance, a bitter expression, that's going to make other people feel bad as well, then truly your face is not your own, because you have a civic duty, a social responsibility, to make sure that what you're projecting out to the world and what you're sharing with everybody is something that is good for them. It kind of reminds me, I spent a bit of time living on a Japanese ship, and there the social etiquette was that if you were unwell, if you had a cold, you had to wear one of those white face masks, because it was irresponsible to go out and be breathing sick germs on other people. And it reminds me a little bit of that. That actually bitterness is so contagious, it's worse than the flu, and that you have an obligation to cover that bitterness with a smile, with some positivity, just like that white mask, in order to protect other people from catching it. It's an interesting idea. I think it's a really important one for leadership. It's not to say that we're not authentic. We have to be authentic, especially in our interactions with other people. But we can still be authentic and choose the attitude that we're not going to let the challenges in our lives become challenges in other people's through sharing that negative mood. So from a leadership perspective, three different streets we can walk down: the Bob Chapman street of empathy and using your heart, using your head and your logic and your innovation. This idea from Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, that you need to have a strong narrative, a really, really clear story. And this beautiful inspiration from the late Stephen Schur, that whatever you do it with a smile, I think can help all of us to walk down a different street and to choose a different route with our leadership. The last note I want to finish on is that none of us need to be restricted by having a leadership position in order to demonstrate leadership. And in fact, one of the best ways that we can lead is by being exceptional followers, by making sure that those who are leading have our support, our acknowledgement. And this can be as simple as when you're in a team and somebody's leading something, that you turn your head towards them, nod, give them your attention while they're talking. Because when other people in the team see that, they'll take the social cue from you, and they'll also treat whatever they're hearing with more importance. And so even in that way, by being a good follower, you're actually becoming a leader as well. Thank you so much for listening today to Radio Shalom. I want to thank our sponsor, NatureBee, and to let you know that if you want to hear this talk again or any of our other programs, you can tune in to Planet FM online and catch another one of Radio Shalom's programs.